It is our pleasure to have Kurt Brown here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, I think I interrupted you as we were talking about universes and multiverses and this notion that the world is an exploding place with the adjacent possible, making all kinds of things available.
Well, and just when we think we know something in that context, and, you know, we now somewhere around, we looked around and recently, turns out all the physics I learned in college is archaic. I mean, mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with anything, but there's this cold, dark matter out there, and there is dark energy, which it turns out makes up 95% more or less of the universe, that we basically don't have access to, we don't experience. That's in addition to the physical limitations of our sensory experience.
Sensory.
We are limited in the light that we know, the wavelengths of light we can see. We're limited in, you know, where we can live.
Poetic somehow.
Well, it is. And I think that's why in some ways you are have articulated something that I think a lot of people articulated in your work and in your editing.
And in your own poetry.
That confluence of it's back to storytelling. I mean, the stories that the physicists are telling and the stories that the poets are telling and novelists and a whole bunch of other people turn out not to be meaningful in isolation.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the image I've had, and I, you know, maybe I got this from D.H. Lawrence, so maybe I'm stealing from him a little bit. But the image I have is of a fire in a clearing, and we're all sitting around that fire telling stories. And the light, as we throw on logs, you know, the light will maybe go out a little farther, and then come back a little farther. But there's always beyond that ring, that halo of knowing. There's going to be, you know, a much vaster amount of darkness, but you know, and we live our lives, our normal lives, inside that halo of light, of knowing, of our beliefs, of our shared communal, social, civilized laws, and so forth.
And aren't both the sciences and the poets calling us to be less afraid of the darkness that is around us?
Yeah, probably, but I, you know, we're always going to be those cavemen afraid of the dark. I mean, we're always going to be afraid of the dark because we are afraid of the unknown. The unknown is very disconcerting to us.
It's also dangerous.
I say that I like it, but I can say that sitting here in a discussion. But in fact, you know, like any other person, when I really get to the edge of the unknown, I get very nervous, whether it's physically in the world or whether it's something that I'm trying to articulate in myself that I don't really want to face or see. So I get nervous and unsettled about that.
So, but you don't necessarily turn to a dogmatic conclusion that shuts out possibilities.
No, that would be an easy way to handle things, I suppose. If you had something you could grab onto and just say this explains everything all the time in every situation. But I just find that for me there's only those are stories like the other stories. They are powerful, incredible stories that have gripped our minds for centuries. But they are competing stories.
Your metaphor or analogy, depending on how you or D.H. Lawrence meant it, reminds me of Joseph Campbell's hero, the mm-hmm. hero's journey, and the hero
with a thousand faces. Mm-hmm.
And the hero's journey involved not just going out, you know, taking a torch and going out into the darkness, or maybe even going out without the torch, but going out and having those experiences, those scary experiences, and then coming back.
And it's not complete until the hero comes back.
He's not a hero. Mm-hmm. Until he comes back.
He's just crazy otherwise.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's reckless, which is a whole other story.
Yeah.
Until he comes back into the community and tells those stories. And in some ways, that's what we want from our poets. That's what we want from our scientists. That's what we want from our heroes.
Right.
And part of the challenge, it would seem, is we're having trouble now understanding who and what our heroes are.
Right. That's the old vision quest of the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. You go out away from your community, and you go into the unknown, and you... however long it takes, and however you have to do it, you might need sweat lodges, and you might need to pile rocks on yourself and lay naked in the snow for 6 days and go hungry or whatever. You know, there are various ways, rituals that they could use to to reach, to have some, but the point was to bring back what you had seen, to bring that vision back. And that's very much what both scientists and poets are trying to do. Now, poets don't try to set themselves up above other people and say, well, there's just common people, and there's the poets who go out and find out all these things. But in a sense, that poets are trying to discover, to have, you know, if I say visions, that sounds like I'm going back to the old Romantic movement, but to have, to be able to glimpse some possibilities, you know, and to be able to come back and articulate that. That's the job of the poet, to use the language that everyone uses, to try to articulate certain ideas, thoughts, feelings, experiences that we ordinarily don't pay attention to. We don't pay attention to. We spend, I think, a great deal of our time, you know, up in the 90 percentile of our time, with small talk and small things that we have to do. We have to pay our bills, and we have to take our kids to school. We have to do all those things. Those are the things that fill our lives. But some of the most important things beyond that are what we never articulate. We don't sit around at a party saying, you know, talking about possibly what we're talking about today, or Heisenberg's principle, or what Keats had to think about negative capability. But in a sense, those are the things that mean the most to us, the most to us. Who am I? How did I get here? You know, what is family? What is love? What is desire? What is all those things that really mean more to us than what we spend 98% of our time doing?
And there is the sense both of poetry and of music, as you drink out of your Mozart cup, that that the silences also matter.
Mm-hmm.
That some of what you're doing has to do as much with what is not said, or the silences between. Where does silence
come? Native Americans know all about that. The silences are very, very expressive. Poets hopefully know that in their work. The white space on the page is silence, for one thing. The white space between stanzas is silence. I tell my students all the time, it's not just a structural break. There's something going on in that silence, in that little white space. It could be, now I'm going to move on to the next subject, or now the next stanza is going to fold back on what I just said and go back on it. Whatever it's going to do, or now I'm going to advance in time, or change the mood, or change the address of the speaker. But something's going to happen in the white space between stanzas. If not, there's no reason for the break to be there. So it's functional in a poem. So that, and also the white space that covers the poem. I'll give you an example of a small poem that I think has so much resonance in it, that is surrounded by a cosmos of silence. Right? It's a poem by John Haynes, the poet John Haynes, who lived in Alaska most of his life. And it's a poem he calls Marigold. That's the title. So we know that he's looking at this flower. And now am I going to remember this poem? He says, Marigold. This is the plaza of paradise. It is always noon, and the dusty bees are dozing like pardoned sinners. That's the whole poem. Now, for me, what is surrounding that is the entire Western civilization's idea about theology, about, you know, the bees are pardoned sinners because they don't have a mind and they don't have any moral thoughts about anything. They're pardoned. They don't know about sin or damnation. It's the flower, it's the plaza of paradise. It's and of course, it's out of time, so it's always noon. All of these things. So it's that little tiny little nugget of a poem somehow is reverberating out into this vast, vast silence. Right? But it means so much to me. I could write probably a 30-page essay on that poem alone.
I'm only
I'm only saying a tiny bit here, but you know, This is the Plaza of Paradise. It is always noon, and the dusty bees are dozing like pardoned sinners. The whole Puritan idea of how nature also fell with humanity is in there. All of that is in there. All of that is suggested in there. It's all folded up in that little nugget.
This reminds me again of Campbell, who said, if there is an eternity, we're in it. And we tend to think of it as some other place. And what you're describing is precisely this. This is our experience, one experience of eternity.
Well, that's what the French surrealist poet Paul Eluard said. There is another world, but it is in this one.
This is Kurt Brown. We're going to be back in a moment for a little bit more of Both Worlds when we return with the Paula Gordon Show.